We're here every Friday between 10 and 11 a.m. discussing legal topics. I'm here with Courtney Waterman. Welcome, Courtney.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. And welcome, everybody. Thanks for listening. And we're going to discuss some... I'm getting a tomahawk chop from George. I'm in the presence of radio greatness, Mr. Talk Radio, George Russell. And we're here every week talking about legal topics in New Hampshire and Massachusetts that could affect you or might interest you. And the holidays are coming up, and a couple of crimes that are charged frequently during this period of time are shoplifting and DWIs, and we'll talk about both of those today. It's Black Friday is coming up. This is where the number one day of shoplifting arrests in New Hampshire occur. And Black Friday is starting, I don't know, around Tuesday now. It seems like some of the stores start Black Friday like around Monday or something now, right?
Yeah, a lot of them actually are having it like
it's like a Black Week.
Yeah. It's a Black Week.
Time out for turkey and the rest of it is shopping. But there are an unusually high number of shoplifting arrests that occur during this time, whether it's because shoplifting is on the rise or they just have more loss prevention people on duty at the different stores. It's a very common charge in Manchester, Salem, Nashua, wherever there's a big mall, there's going to be shoplifting arrests. So be careful out there if you're getting that urge to take something or switch tags or try and get yourself a deal. The odds are higher during that week that you're going to get caught. If you do get caught, or if you're falsely accused, or if you're rightly accused, give me a call. I do a lot of shoplifting defense. My number is 603-893-0074. I'm located in Salem, not far from the mall, and just be extra careful out there. People get stressed during this time. You know, if Black Friday stresses you out, just don't go out and get involved in it.
Yeah, you know, Cyber Monday follows up quickly.
That's right. Cyber Monday's out there. Don't commit cyber crimes either, but it's just as easy to buy stuff online as it is to spend an afternoon, with a loss prevention officer. What happens if you get caught for shoplifting or accused of shoplifting? Typically is somebody from the store will approach you and say, hey, you need to come in the back room. And they bring you into a room and you're kind of scared. Most people don't get more than one shoplifting offense in their life. Most people don't get any, but most shoplifting offenses are first offenses, and it's usually an underlying, you know, issue, mental health or stress or something. And sometimes the stress just overwhelms you, and that's one of the ways that people act out sometimes is to pick something up and try and make their way out of the store with it. In a lot of cases, the people actually have the money to pay for it on them, and just the frustration and stress of the holiday sometimes just overwhelms them. If that's you and that happens to you, give me a call, 603-893-0074. Now, a couple of tips if you do find yourself in that situation. Obviously, you know, I'm not encouraging you to find yourself in that situation, but if a loss prevention person comes and asks you to step to the back, go back into the scary office that they've got back there, they will try and get you to sign some paperwork that says that you're guilty. And they kind of coax you into that sometimes by saying, look, if you just stay out of the store, you sign this agreement to stay out of the store and just write out what happened for us, don't worry about it. And as soon as you put the pen down and the ink's still dry and the police show up and arrest you. It's best, just like when you're dealing with the police, if you don't sign anything, you don't say anything, just let them go through their process and remain quiet. Don't tell the police anything. And just get yourself bailed out and call me at 603-893-0074. What's in the news, Courtney, besides shoplifting on Black Friday?
There's a lot in the news this week. I mean, obviously, with everything that's happened with France, and there's a lot of legal things going on in the news with shootings and, you know, other things like more people dying by police officers. So,
yeah, there certainly have been quite a few of those. I saw an interesting story out of New Jersey where a state trooper on duty in his cruiser rear-ended somebody, and he was totally wasted. He ran into her in a rest area, and he blew a 1.6. He tried to blame it on anesthesia. He had just had an operation and had his uniform on backwards and stuff and a bunch of empty cans in the back of his car. Yeah, yeah. That one's up on my Facebook page. Feel free to follow me on Facebook. Like our Facebook pages. It's at Bye Bye DWI. And you can read about interesting things that happen like that in DWI News. He had 8 or 9 empties in his car, and his cruiser. Offered to pay the woman $1,000 not to call 911. Said he would take care of it for her because he was a trooper.
I mean, I would feel so obligated. Like,
yeah.
That's horrible. You know, it's like that lady, I would shame on her if she didn't call the police.
Oh, yeah, she did. She did. He went to pull his badge out or something, and a bunch of beer bottle tops came out, and a loaded clip from his gun.
Oh, my word.
Just kind of fosters a sense of, you know, feeling safe. But my name again is Mark Stevens. Feel free to call me if you are accused of a crime, DWI or otherwise, at 603-893-0074. You can call at any time. It bounces to my cell phone if I'm not in the office.
So have you heard about this lady who's terminally ill and they won't give her, like, give this lady her pot? Like, she's dying. And Maine is like, she's totally eligible, but because we don't have dispensaries in New Hampshire.
Where is she, New Hampshire or Maine?
She's New Hampshire. And they won't give her her pot. And
she has her pot?
Well, they don't have dispensaries in New Hampshire, so. But she has, like, all of the stuff to get this is, like, her prescription or whatever. And she's literally terminally ill. She's, like, doesn't have, I don't think she has very long to live. And so she won't get it. New Hampshire, she's, like, fighting the court. And they're, like, no, this would be, like, not right because we're not controlling it now. And we don't have the dispensary. Even though Maine's, like, hey, listen, this lady's eligible. Like, send her our way, you know?
Yeah.
But it would be illegal to get it from Maine because we don't have the dispensary in New Hampshire.
Well, that's an important point. There are dispensaries in Maine and there are dispensaries in Massachusetts, and people who have a prescription, a legitimate prescription, and they get it from a state-run dispensary or state-approved and authorized dispensary, think that they can just drive around with it in New Hampshire, and some of them get charged with possession or transporting marijuana because they think they can just tell the officer, I got some weed in the car, here's my prescription. But there's a process that you have to follow if you want to do that. If you have prescribed marijuana and you're a resident of another state and you have the prescription and there's documentation that you need, you can look at it online. We should put that on our website, what they need. But you need a letter from the doctor saying what it's for, as well as the prescription. But there is a way to comply with that. So New Hampshire is kind of a backward state when it comes to medical marijuana and marijuana in general.
Is there any way, like, around that if her doctor were in Maine, or is she, because she's a New Hampshire resident?
She's going to get jammed up because she's a New Hampshire resident. This is the last place around here where possession of marijuana is a crime, even if somebody's dying like that, you know. But
and she's older, too. Like, I don't, you know.
They don't care. The man doesn't care. If you're old or young, rich or poor, if you have marijuana, they're going to charge you with it. And if you look at, there have been some articles recently, you know, where New Hampshire's got this big push on to fight the heroin epidemic. And one of their gripes is that the state lab is overrun with processing and testing drug samples. And they say they're behind, I think it's 3,800 cases. But the 3,800 cases aren't all heroin. Most of those are marijuana cases, you know, where they find a joint in a kid's car and it's up there waiting to get processed, which is a pretty great waste of money and resources.
So I just pulled up some of the story here, and it's saying that she sued the state, which I didn't actually know that.
Awesome.
Yes. She is battling stage 4 lung cancer, and the state denied her an ID card so that she can go to Maine and get and take medical marijuana for pain, so she sued the state.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the judge considered it, but, you know, they're not really giving in. So I'm not sure what's going to happen with that, but she's, like, taking it to the next level. People have been, like, you know, there's been a little outpouring on social media, like, give the lady her pot, like, she's dying.
I would imagine so. I think I might tweet it if I find the article. And she should have it, but you have to realize, too, the judges don't have unlimited authority in what they can do. If the law says that he can't do it or she can't do it, the judge can't, you know, bend the law. They have to apply it. That's a, you know, the medical marijuana issue is something that it's kind of like a political turd that nobody wants to sign off on for some reason. I don't know why. It seems to have overwhelming support. from people who use it and don't use it. It just seems like a very victimless crime that should be done away with. But for the time being, we're stuck with it. If you get charged with possession of marijuana or they find marijuana in your car, give me a call, 603-893-0074.
And I think it's important that you do practice in Massachusetts also. So for people that are in a state line battle or whatnot.
Yeah, that's true. And that's that does become an issue with people who have a medical marijuana card in Massachusetts and they get arrested up here.
There are dispensaries now. They did this thing on the news in Mass not too long ago.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've had clients who get arrested who have a medical marijuana card and have a valid prescription from Massachusetts. They live in Mass and they... You know, they drive up here and the officer says, why do I smell marijuana? And they say, because I have some, you know, prescribed it. But if you find yourself in that situation, do feel free to give me a call. I'm with you. 603-893-0074. My name is Attorney Mark Stevens. You might get Courtney on the phone and she can help you out and point you in my direction. We're here on WSN Radio AM 1590 every Friday from 10 to 11, usually here with Courtney, and discussing legal topics that could affect you in Massachusetts and New Hampshire.
So this is something really bizarre that I heard, but...
Awesome.
So Pittsfield, New Hampshire, right? I didn't know that they had this. I actually, when I was in high school, had a few friends and hung out there a little bit, but they have a curfew for youth that are under the age of 16, and they are not allowed outside between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. And I just find this peculiar.
It is peculiar, and that is an issue. There was one in Franklin. I think the town of Franklin came to a truce with the ACLU.
I have on Franklin. I'm just kidding.
There's one in Summersworth, and these things have become kind of a hot topic, and whether or not a town can just ban people, whatever age they are,
like
from being outside.
16 years old, you know, 16 and under, 16-year-olds right. Can drive.
And they can work.
Yeah, like stores stay open after 9.
That's right.
I'm just thinking, how is this legal?
It's kind of marginal. I don't think it is legal, but towns pass ordinances and then they enforce them. But the ACLU in New Hampshire, I know, is fighting this pretty aggressively, and I think the one in Franklin just got done away with. And
they've removed the one in Pittsfield.
Oh, good.
Yeah, they've removed it. So I don't know if there's any remaining. I just think, like, how long was this in place? Like, I never knew about that.
It don't seem to last long. I think the one in Summersworth has been done away with, too. But, the easiest thing in the world for the police to police a town is to ban people from being outside, I guess. But, if you're walking or driving to work and you're 16 years old, or even if you just want to go outside for a walk, what's the big deal?
It should walk the dog.
Walk the dog. There's all kinds of innocent.
Did you be with your parents? Is that allowed or no?
yeah. And it's kind of like a, nighttime shelter in place for the youth for some reason. But if that happens in your town, you should fight it and voice your opinion and tell people that you think that it's stupid. If you do think it's stupid, I do.
I couldn't believe that was actually happening in the year 2015. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, there was a little run on them where they became kind of popular for towns to do. Typically it's, a few kids get arrested for possessing alcohol or something, and they just decide to just keep them all in the house. You keep them under lockdown from 9 a.m. or whatever time until the morning. But if you look at some of the comments that are raised online, how do I get to work? I work at a retail place or I work at a fast food place. How am I supposed to get there? Can the cops just drive through the drive-through line and ask you for your ID and say you're out too late?
This is like so bizarre. How many other states is this? I don't know. It just seems weird. unconstitutional.
Live or die unless you're 16. But
except we used to have a seatbelt law that said when you 12 and under, you have to buckle up. 12 and under. Because I remember that, and I feel like I was in the gap, and then they changed it to 18.
You didn't want to wear your seatbelt?
Well, it was weird, because they had signs everywhere. If you're 12 and under, wear your seatbelt. So it was I'm 12 now.
That one, I think, is a little different than just telling people they can't leave their house,
I just think it falls in the same kind of category.
It does. It's
bizarreness.
The state telling you what to do, yeah.
12-year-old enough to now not wear a seatbelt. Why would you teach that? Live for your die.
Once you hit 13, unbuckle.
So weird.
Smoke them if you got them. We're going to take a quick break. This is Mark Stevens here with Courtney Waterman on WSM and Radio, AM 1590, here every week between 10 and 11. My number is 603-893-0074. If you find yourself charged with or suspected of any kind of crime, give me a call. I give a free consultation. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Please hang in there with us, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If everything you thought you knew about your money turned out not to be true, when would you want to know? Hi, this is Steve Kelly, Free Money Guy from the Free Money Radio Hour, and this is your Free Money Minute of the Day. Have you ever been in a casino? Remember the thrill of winning and the agony of losing? Kind of like the stock market, wasn't it? Well, now put yourself in a casino where you can't lose. One where every time your number comes up, they add to the pile of chips. But there's only one catch. Instead of giving you all of the chips you would have won, they only give you half. But every time you lose, you don't. When your number doesn't come up, they just let it ride. Well, there isn't a casino like that, but there is a retirement investment that works exactly like that. Now that's free money. To find out more, go online today to freemoneyguys.com. That's freemoneyguys.com and watch the video. You'll be glad you did. How can you know what you should do if you don't know what you can do? Remember, knowing the truth can set your money free. This is Steve Kelly with your Free Money Minute of the Day. Until next time, keep your money free.
New research finds the magnitude of the retirement savings shortfall in America today is staggering. The U.S. retirement savings deficit could be as high as $14 trillion. The American dream of retiring after a lifetime of work will be long delayed, if not impossible, for many. Acting sooner rather than later can greatly improve your own retirement security. This is why our no-cost, no-obligation retirement income analysis is so vitally important. To find out how to get your very own eye-opening, no-cost, no-obligation income retirement analysis from the Free Money Radio guys, go to freemoneyradio.com. That's freemoneyradio.com or call 855-4-SAFE-INCOME. 855-4-SAFE-INCOME. Call today. Do it today. You'll be glad you did.
If it keeps on raining.
Thanks for coming back. I hope you enjoyed that When the Levee Breaks by Zeppelin. Thank you, George, for that. That's awesome. We're talking about legal topics. My name again is Attorney Mark Stevens. My number is 603-893-0074. Call it anytime. If I'm not there, it bounces over to my cell phone. The holidays are coming up. We started to talk about the high risk of getting arrested for shoplifting if your activities do look suspicious in the store due to the high number of police and high number of loss prevention people that are on duty at this time of year. Be careful out there. If you get that urge, try and fight it off. If you get caught or they suspect you of doing something wrong, give me a call. If you've been accused of theft or shoplifting, my name is Mark Stevens. My number is 603-893-0074. Give me a call. I understand. We'll try and get you out of it if possible. Another thing that is common at this time of year are roadblocks. You got to watch out for these. They're becoming, unfortunately, a way of life here in New Hampshire, and they're popping up everywhere. Thanksgiving Day weekend, there'll be a few of them out, probably on the seacoast over in Seabrook on Route 1A. And
seem to hit there hard.
They hit there hard, and they stop hundreds, 600, 700, 800, 900 cars and maybe get, two DWI arrests. Two or three. It's really sad. But they basically shut that road down. If there's a show over at the casino, you have to be careful. They will be out there and stopping you. There's another one off exit 4 in Londonderry, just as you turn onto 102, coming in either direction, going towards Derry. There's one right there where they funnel you into the parking lot near the two fireworks stores there. They try and find areas where there's no place to turn away from them. You know, there's no way out. It's like a choke point. They just funnel you into this scary situation.
I hate that feeling.
Oh, yeah. Most people would rather kiss Charlie Sheen than, end up in a roadblock. But if you do find yourself in a roadblock, you want to think about what you're going to do ahead of time. Have your license with you. Have your registration with you. if they ask you if you've been drinking, if you say yes, or I had one, or I had two, or anything like that, you're going to be asked to step out of the car, and you're probably not going to be asked to get back into the car. You're probably going to get arrested, because these roadblocks are run with federal grant money. And when they apply for the next grant, they have to show how many people they arrested for DWI. And the last one, show that it's what they call a high-yield area. And so marginal cases that might not get arrested on a roadside stop will get arrested in a roadblock. So everything that you say can and will be used against you, like the Miranda Court said, and it's never more true than in a roadblock. So you don't have to tell the officer your life story. You shouldn't lie to them, but just tell them you want to talk to your lawyer, and it should end the unpleasant encounter for you. You don't have to do field sobriety tests in a roadblock. If you do them, they will almost always deem you to be a failure, no matter how well you do. You could be a gymnast, and they're still going to say that you failed. So just be careful. Think about what you're going to do ahead of time. When you're under pressure, it's harder to make decisions like that. The conventional wisdom among the driving populace, especially people who haven't been arrested before, is that if they cooperate, they'll probably be better off. Now, it's true that if you're polite, you'll be better off, but being cooperative
can lead
to a conviction. That's right. So be careful out there. You don't have to do the circus monkey tricks that they want you to do. Those things are designed for you to fail.
So I got a question. There's been a lot about police and body cams and not having on, you know, them on while they're doing things that are shady. Do they have to wear those?
It's a shady button that they hit when they're going to do something.
It is like a shady button. I don't know why they have to be shady about it.
Just George has a body cam over there.
Keep them on, you know? I mean, I don't understand. Anyway, so there's only certain people that would want to be police officers, you know, and it's like you go under oath and, you know, you're like, yeah, I'm going to protect everybody, not, you know, be deliberately bullying people. I feel like they're bullies. But anyways, yeah. Do they have to wear body cams at those roadblocks?
They do not. In fact, most roadblock field sobriety testing are not in New Hampshire are not videotaped, which is really weird. And very suspicious because
see?
You look at the amount of money that they pour into these things and the publicity and all that and the number of officers that they have, number of cruisers. It's just a big, scary police state looking mess. But they don't videotape them in most cases, which would be very easy for them to do. So it takes away the best evidence at trial that you could possibly have, which is what did this person really look like? What was their balance like? What was their speech like? They'll almost always say the person was slurring their speech, but without a video and audio, it's hard to rebut that. It's hard to kind of fight against that with just that fact alone. But a lot of times cruisers will have videos in some towns, and some of the state police have cruiser videos. And when there's a cruiser video, it's great because that kind of tethers the police report to the truth. Because it's, you know, video is a truth box. You can't change it. You can't make a person look drunk by playing a video, unless they did look drunk. But police reports tend to be more closely tied to what happened when people know they're mic'd up. They know that they're, you know, somebody's going to be looking at this video at some point in time. But unfortunately, most places don't have videotapes in New Hampshire. You watch cops shows on TV from around the country. They videotape everything. And it is what it is. But
it's Hollywood.
It's Hollywood, but it's real life. You know, you watch all these police encounters from around the country, even ones where something really bad happened, like a shooting, and they produce the videos. And for better or for worse, as far as the police go, you know, they record it. But not here. So basically the way it works is the police officer writes a report on what his observations were, and you know, they tend to be kind of canned, slurred speech, red eyes, red face, poor balance, unsteady on their feet. And then you have to go about fighting that with what really happened. But as far as the body cams go, not yet. Hopefully someday they will.
Yeah. You know, that would seem more appropriate, especially stopping people like that. You know, I mean, I've gotten the flyer. Did this bother you? Did this take up your time? Like, yeah, it bothered me.
One thing that's an interesting new invention or application, it's only on Androids right now. It's called a DWI dialer. And a friend of mine, Jamie Belager in Texas, is a big proponent of this. His number is plugged in. You press an app and this, and it starts recording everything that's said back and forth. in a police encounter, and a text goes to his phone that says,
"That's awesome.
Yeah, somebody's been stopped." It'll be interesting to see if that catches any traction here in New Hampshire.
I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah, you're probably going to order it.
Sounds pretty good.
It is pretty good.
So, but what do you think about this new like drug court money that they're going to do here, right here in Nashua?
Yeah, the drug courts in theory are a good idea. What they're geared towards is rehabilitation and counseling as opposed to just incarceration, because for decades the government's response to drugs has been to incarcerate their way out of the
Does this change something for, say, a client with just like a marijuana charge? Or
yeah, typically the marijuana charges don't get funneled into that. It's usually...
That's weird to me. It's like a drug, so why wouldn't it go to the drug court?
That's a good question. The reason is that most marijuana charges are misdemeanors, whereas possession of cocaine or heroin or the addictive drugs are felonies. So one way to avoid the felony conviction and consequences, state prison and all the other horrible things that happen as a result of a drug conviction, is to divert the case into a drug court or a diversionary program where they... If they comply with the counseling and pass urine tests and things like that, and they're on a sort of probation at the end of a given period of time, then they would either not get convicted or at least not get incarcerated after it.
So they also have this new task force they're going to introduce, if it gets approved, I think, to fight the drug problem. But it said that it was directly tied to Manchester police, not Nashua, but I didn't hear anything about a drug court in Manchester. Do they already have one?
I don't believe so. No, this
interesting.
No,
it's just weird how all these different things for the drugs are like in these different areas of the same state when it's supposed to be like state law. But
yeah, task force generally, from the defendant's perspective, are bad. it just means that they're putting more focus into arresting people for drugs or DWI. They have DWI task force.
Well, it sounded
like
in the article I read that they were going to be helping people who can't get the medication to like get off heroin and stuff that's being rejected by insurance companies. It sounded like they were going to be doing a lot of things that this diversionary drug court program would be.
Diversionary programs are good. It's a little bit more, a more forward-thinking way to look at a drug problem than just simply arresting people and putting them in jail. If you put somebody who's addicted to drugs into jail, it doesn't help the addiction. It just
seems just so new. You know, I think it's good to forward think as well. I think it's good they're treating it like this, but it seems like just all over the place right now. Like they have all these different things going on. Like how is that going to all come into play for everybody, you know?
Well, it depends on what any specific locality can get for funding, what they can get approved. You know, all this, none of this stuff is free. But I think a more forward-thinking way to look at the drug problem is how to fix it rather than just to incarcerate people, because that hasn't worked for the last, I don't know, when did they declare war on drugs? The 70s?
I don't know. It said, I think, 1986 this task force was originally in New Hampshire, or maybe there was one originally, something like that. But
well, from 86 till now, it's not done much to cure the problem. It's just getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, no, right.
So I think that the government's looking at that. We saw a large release of people from the federal prisons who were in there just specifically for drug possession crimes, where they got huge sentences for simple possession of drugs, or even distribution to friends or family or whatever. So incarcerating the way out of the problem does not work. The last several decades have proved that. The question is, what should they do? And counseling and treatment seems to be, a pretty wise option.
Is it still treated like a criminal offense because they have this court system they're going to put them through?
Well, if you get the only way to get to court is if you get charged. So if somebody's charged with a drug crime, the state looks at it. Is this an appropriate candidate to divert into drug court? Is it somebody?
I see.
If a person has a drug problem and they have a history of stealing, for instance, to support it, then they probably wouldn't, people with violent felonies on their record, burglaries, robberies, probably are not going to get diverted into it. But if it's somebody who just can't beat a heroin addiction or can't beat a cocaine addiction, they've got these possessory offenses. I saw a kid in court the other day who was going on with. But it's somebody who just says, I can't quit, and they don't have insurance, their insurance won't cover treatment, or they can't get a bed. Sometimes they have to go to another state to get a bed. And it's, you know, there's a shortage of those, but it might be a good time to put the money into that instead of locking people up. Because if you look at a person who's trying to beat an addiction, they get charged with, let's say, possession of cocaine. When they're done with that case, they're a felon, you know, so now they can't get a job.
Right.
You know.
Right. There's all these things that go with that. No, that's interesting, your perspective. I wasn't sure what your thoughts on that were, if that was good, if that was bad. Like, you know, the way they explain it on the news and, like, in the articles you read doesn't really break it down in the legal sense. It just sort of sugarcoats it all.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Sugarcoated. It's kind of one-sided.
I'm like, oh, well, that's cool. So what does that mean? Like, you know what I mean? It's not really very explanatory.
Right. What does that really mean to real people, right? Yeah, whenever they announce these new programs, they usually ask the cops about it. They ask prosecutors about it. But they don't all the time ask for what the defense perspective is or what the pitfalls of that type of diversionary thing might be. When somebody's looking at a potential diversion, you have to look at, is this something that you think the person can succeed at? You know, it's like probation. If you try and avoid probation if you don't think the person has any hope at all of being successful on probation. If they just can't stop using and they get put on probation, they get a dirty urine, they get violated, and it's just this vicious cycle.
I mean, how about this guy who just stole from the armory? I mean, he had an ankle bracelet on. They tracked him, right? They were like, yeah, at this time he was in the armory, like, in Worcester, robbing it. Like,
oh, is that so?
Yeah, he had, and I'm like, that's incredible to me that it didn't ping to, like, his probation officer at, like, you know, midnight that, hey, this guy's potentially robbing an armory.
They usually do. You know, they'll notify whoever's monitoring the...
I believe he was a Mass resident, but they found him in, like, Long Island.
That's not good either, because those things have a little chip that can tell whoever's monitoring the person where they are. I've had, you know, folks come into the office that have, you know, an ankle bracelet, and because of the proximity of where we are to the Mass border, sometimes it will read like they're in Massachusetts, and they'll get a call right away. You know, where are you? You're in Massachusetts? And
I mean, I think it took them a few days to find this guy, because I was like, it happened really close to the thing in France, and I'm thinking, like, well, now we have someone that's robbed an armory, like, in Worcester. Like, this is not good, you know? It's like,
if you're on a bracelet, don't rob an armory. It's the lesson to be learned from that. But if you are out on a bracelet and you want to go out of state, you have to just, it's pretty simple. You just ask for a travel permit if you have a legitimate reason to go out of state, and they're usually pretty good about signing them. They just want to know where you are. So if you come into my office, tell them I'm going near the border. I actually have a charger for your bracelets and one of the chairs in my guest chairs in my office, and you can charge it up while we're talking there. My office is in Salem, New Hampshire, just off exit 2, and my number is 603-893-0074. My name again is Attorney Mark Stevens. I'm here with Courtney Waterman. It's Friday morning, and we're talking about topics in the news. Did they catch the guy in the armory? Or
no, they found him in Long Island like a few days later.
What did he get out of there?
A bunch of like 9mm and a couple like assault rifles. Yeah.
He had bad timing too.
Yeah, like super bad timing.
Right after that, you know, unfortunately, the tragedy in France and, you know, people who are out stealing.
I mean, good for France, though. They got that guy. Like,
they sure did. They blew him away the other day, I guess.
Proud of those people. That's really good.
It is good. If you find yourself charged with any kind of crime at all, feel free to give me a call. My name again is Attorney Mark Stevens. My website is byebyedwi.com, and that will give you some information on New Hampshire and Massachusetts DWI laws and OUI laws in Massachusetts. They call them OUIs in Mass, and they call them DWIs here in New Hampshire. They're exactly the same thing as far as it relates to you. If you do get arrested, you were probably given a choice whether to take a breath test or not, or a blood test, or a field sobriety test after your arrest. And if you refused, in New Hampshire, they gave you a temporary license. It's that pink piece of paper you got, and that is good for 30 days. And it's very important that you take some action within those 30 days to challenge that suspension. If you don't, the suspension is automatic. And the only automatic suspension is the one that you don't challenge. So if you have one of those pink slips in your wallet and you want to give me a call and talk about it, my number is 603-893-0074. My other website is nhcrime.com, and that is a website that talks about other types of crimes, shoplifting, driving after suspension, and all the other things that everyday people sometimes find themselves charged with. It's a scary process. Most people who get charged with DWI have no criminal record at all. Probably two out of every three people that come in the office have never been in trouble at all, other than minor tickets and stuff. So this process can be very, very scary. In New Hampshire now, your arraignment for DWI is supposed to occur within 14 days of your arrest, so it doesn't give you a lot of time to act. Make sure you call right away, 603-893-0074. Excuse me.
So how about your wildcats?
Excuse me?
How about those wildcats? Now they're making the news lately.
Yep, the wildcats are doing pretty well. Got a big one against Maine, arch rival, and a lot on the line in that one.
And I'm kind of hoping that they kill BC in hockey also this Saturday. Just because I don't like BC.
I always hope for that too. But BC's pretty good. But
well, I'm rooting for the Wildcats.
I appreciate that. In turn, I will root for the Seminoles whenever possible. If you find yourself being accused by the police, or the police want to talk to you about a drug charge, this is another thing that the police are really focused on. And if they suspect you of any kind of drug crime, then they're going to want to talk to you. Talking to the police about something they suspect you of is usually a very bad idea. You should talk to a lawyer first. And my number is 603-893-0074. If you have no experience with dealing with the police, it's very, very perilous for you to just go down and have a little talk with them, which is what they'll make it sound like. It's not like on TV where, you know, the accused and his lawyer sit there and listen to the cops yell at him, and then the lawyer tells him to confess. We don't do that. If you hire me, you will not talk to the police regarding your case. I'll do that for you. The police are trained in how to ask you questions, and they're trained to get people to incriminate themselves if they suspect you of something. They'll make it very easy for you to confess, and a confession is, as you can imagine, the worst evidence against you that they could have. It's worse than a blood test. Your statements are what can get you in the biggest problem. And it's hard if you've never been in that situation when the police ask you questions that start out very innocuous, start out very innocent, and build themselves up to you being convicted. It starts out with where you've been, and it ends up with, do you feel a buzz right now? And there's a continuum of questions that happen along the way. And it's a trap that people fall into. Another thing that you have to be careful about telling the police is prescription medication use. It's lawful for you to take prescription medications the way that the doctor prescribes them to you. And most people think, well, the doctor told me I can take this, I'm okay to drive. You may or may not be okay to drive. Most prescription bottles have warnings on them not to drive, even for penicillin and stuff. It's just like a butt covering thing from the pharmaceutical companies and the medical profession. But those warnings can come back to get you if you show the cop the bottle. So if they ask you if you've been taking medications, which happens when they don't smell beer in your breath, you don't have to answer their questions. You don't have to lie to them, of course, but just say you want to talk to your lawyer, and that should end it. And just cling to that, I want to talk to my lawyer, mantra when you're dealing with the police. You'll be a lot better off if they don't have statements. You can see a judge or a jury listening to the facts as the police relate them, and how long a person stood on one leg, or whether they stepped off an imaginary line while the cop was, you know, performing the field sobriety test is one thing. But if they tell the cop, I had 9 beers, it's not a good statement. And you just see people folding their arms when they hear that. So 2 is not a bad answer. 2 is the most common answer. 2 a while ago is not a bad answer. But the best answer is, I want to talk to my lawyer. Don't tell them exactly what you've done, where you've been, and all of that good stuff. Because some of these statements can really can sink your ship, even if you weren't drunk. You know, some people, I know people that can drink 9 beers, 10 beers over the course of time. They're big people or they're just experienced drinkers, and they can probably drive quite fine, but people don't understand that. I do, though. Call me, 603-893-0074, and you can call that number, like I said, at any time at all. It will bounce to my cell phone. If I'm awake, I'll answer it, and I look forward to speaking with you about that. Don't forget to act if you're on a temporary license before the temporary license expires. Don't wait till the last day either, because there's a little trick with that. You'll get a suspension notice that says your suspension starts at 12:01 a.m. on the 30th day. So they jip you out of that last day. They only give you a minute because the law makes them give you some time on that last day.
Oh, that's some BS right there.
It sure is. Yeah, and people think they have till that day. But once that 12:01 expires, it's like a pumpkin. Boom. You cannot request your administrative license suspension hearing at that time. And we do win some of those, even on refusals. So why not take a shot at it? It's an hour out of your time. It's a relatively quick hearing in Concord, but sometimes we prevail on those things. And no matter what your result was, whether it was a refusal, whether it was a aggravated DWI, it's always best to try and make them prove it. And sometimes we prevail on those things. So give me a call if you find yourself in that situation, 603-893-0074. One thing with that, too, that a common mistake that people make shortly after their arrest is couple of days after the arrest or the next day, they're over at the police department clamoring for their police report, like it's going to be some kind of talisman that gets them out of a DWI. It doesn't. The police report probably is not written yet, and there's a very big disadvantage to asking for your police report immediately in New Hampshire. And the disadvantage is this. The cops have 10 days to mail in that suspension request to the DMV or you don't get suspended. Sometimes they forget. I would estimate about 5% of the time. Not a huge percentage of the time, but if you're the lucky one out of 20, it's a good thing. If you're over there bugging the police department secretary for your police report every day, they will not forget you, and your suspension will be automatic. They will send that out just to get you off their back. So don't go over bugging them, no matter what your relatives or friends at the bar tell you, or your cousin who's a lawyer in Nevada or something. Don't do it. Call me. I'll get it for you at the appropriate time. Ask for the hearing at the appropriate time when it's too late for the cop to mail it in if he forgot. 603-893-0074. Call me about any of your New Hampshire licensing issues or efforts to get your license back, whether it be for a DWI suspension, habitual offender certification, or any other kind of hassles that you're going through with the DMV right now. I'm located in Salem. I practice in New Hampshire and Massachusetts, and I'd be glad to speak with you about it. I do a free consultation, and I look forward to speaking with you. I'm just being handed a map. It's Ben Carson's geography fail. Did he forget Vermont? Is that what the problem is with this?
It looks like a lot.
Just looking at real quick, it looks like that puzzle that you did when you were a kid, and you try and fit the states into the little hole that they fit in.
It looks like he smushed a couple extra states, maybe over to like the East Coast.
He may not like Vermont. I don't know. I think Vermont is stuck on the bottom of Connecticut on this map. I don't know why.
They don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. And they deleted that. It was since deleted.
Oh, was it?
Mm.
Yeah, someone probably drew it to their attention that geography is not brain surgery, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, this is the season for politics, and I don't express views on politics because Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, Independents, everybody gets arrested, people from all walks of life, everyday people that have never been in trouble before, law-abiding people. If the police smell beer in your breath, you're more than likely going to get arrested. Sometimes you're stopped for a really innocuous reason you don't know about. Maybe you got a light out or something, or your registration expired, or something you just forgot about. It's not like you're weaving or driving into a house or something like that. But everyday people can find themselves in an unwanted encounter with the police. And if that's you, give me a call. I'd be glad to speak with you about it, and I'll tell you what I think, whether I think I can help you or not, and what I think your next step should be. And my number again is 603-893-0074. It's Follow Friday. Follow me at @byebyedwi. I follow most people back unless you look wicked creepy.
You're wicked
which is
creepy.
Not most
we
people, but some people do.
There's
some wicked creepy people on Twitter, but
and you're on Instagram now, Mark.
I am on Instagram. Yep, it's what is it? Hashtag Attorney Mark Stevens.
I believe.
Yeah, something like that. You'll find it. Just Google it or look on Instagram, and you'll see stuff on there. I just put up a T-shirt I really like. It says Goodell is a douche. It has nothing to do with the law, but he is. Anyway, that's my statement for the day about that. But I found that on Causeway Street. Guy had a special cart set up, all with Roger Goodell themes, most negative, and they were selling like hotcakes down there. He had every size too. I really appreciate that. If you're listening out there, hope to see you down there tonight, man. I'm gonna pick one up for George. Whether he wears it or not is up to him. But it says Roger Goodell is a hashtag douche. But if you find yourself driving home from the Patriots game, sometimes. This is when there's a lot of police out, especially down in that area. Be careful out there. There are troopers everywhere. I've seen people getting arrested in the parking lots down there, doing field sobriety tests on uphill gravel. And be very, very careful if you're coming out of a sporting event, Bruins game, Celtics game, or anything else. If you tell the police when they ask you where you're coming from, if you're coming from a game, which is sometimes obvious based on your attire, face paint or whatever, they're going to ask you if you drank at the game. And if you tell them yes, you're going to get field sobriety tested. So be careful with those answers. Good answer is no, or I want to talk to my lawyer. The best answer when you're asked a question by the cops is I want to talk to my lawyer. Because if you cling to that and insist on it, they really have to stop questioning. That's one of your Miranda rights. Miranda rights are often overlooked by the police. And but it's something that bothers people. A lot of people, when they come in the office, say, I wasn't read my rights. What's the deal with that? The cop kept asking me questions. And if the police ask you questions after you've been placed in custody and they don't read you your rights, then you should try and keep the results of that interrogation suppressed or excluded when you go to trial. The tricky thing is that although your Miranda rights protect you at all times, there are exceptions to what they call a threshold inquiry, and that threshold inquiry are the first questions the cops ask, like, hey, where are you coming from? Where are you going to? Had anything to drink tonight? The answers to those questions are usually not suppressible or excludable because you're not in custody yet, you haven't done field tests yet, and this is where they gather all the stuff that they're going to use against you because they're smart and they're competent in most cases in what they do. So they know how to get the answers out of you, and then they'll use them against you later. So you do have Miranda rights. They do mean something to us, even if not to the police. And just be careful at all times what you say. When you read the Miranda rights, that's when it really flags it for you. Oh, I have a right to remain silent? That sounds good. I think I'll do that. That's a wise course of action. But try and keep your mouth shut before you get arrested, before all the bad stuff really happens. Just think about how it would sound. Before you ever asked that question, how would it sound if you said, I had four glasses of wine with dinner? Doesn't sound good. You know, even if four glasses of wine at a restaurant, which are kind of stingy sometimes, would not impair you based on your drinking experience, what you ate and everything like that. It can cause you to blow over on a breath test, and it can sound really bad at a trial. One or two sounds a little bit okay. More than that, the answers start to get worse and worse. The worst answer I've ever seen is 27. I had a guy say he had 27 beers. The cop asked, how many beers have you had? And he asked his passenger, how many did you have? And he said, three. And he said, well, then I had 27 because we're out.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a bad answer in an otherwise
terrible answer.
Very defendable case. So
I would have gone with three, like my friend said.
I would have gone with three. Why would you go with three instead of two? Everyone does two.
Well, I'm just saying if my friend was like three, yeah, I probably would have gone two. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I definitely wouldn't have said 27.
Yeah, 27's bad. But people just don't understand that, even if it doesn't impair me. Track them over the course of a Bruins game. But and they won. But another trick question to watch out for is the cops will ask you to rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10. A lot of police departments are doing this now. At the end of the field sobriety test, they'll say, rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being sober, totally sober, and 10 being falling down drunk. And they don't tell you what the numbers 2 through 9 mean or what number equates to or correlates to.
Are you allowed to say 0?
Impaired. Yes. 0 is an awesome answer, or I don't answer your question. Although if you listen to the question carefully and it's a scale of 1 to 10, they'll say that you're intoxicated because you didn't pick one of those numbers. You picked 0. So pick the number that he says equates to sober. Another smart answer to that question is...
-1.
I feel fine. I'm not drunk. I'm sober. That sort of thing. You know, but if you pick 4, a lot of people pick the number of drinks that they had as the number. They pick 2, 3, 4. Some people go high 8 or 9. That's bad. But if you pick a number in the middle of the scale and that answer comes in a trial against you, it doesn't look good because it's like the doctor scale of pain. What's your pain at? It's totally arbitrary, you know,
right,
how you pick it. What's your, you know, how much does it hurt on a scale of 1 to 10? I don't know, a 3. Don't just guess a number. Don't say a number or pick the sober number. But be careful because they ask it in this really nice conversational way after you do your field sobriety tests. And all he's thinking about, no matter what you answer, is putting those cuffs on you. You're about to get arrested when you're asked that question. So be careful.
Yeah. That doesn't sound like a good time.
It's not a good time. It's like kissing Charlie Sheen, like I said.
Terrible.
But at any rate, we're just about to wrap up here. We've got a couple minutes left, but I just want to give you my contact information one more time and thank you for listening today. My name again is Attorney Mark Stevens. My number is 603-893-0074, and I'm located in Salem, and I practice in New Hampshire and Massachusetts. If you've been accused of DWI, arrested for anything at all, or find yourself in a bad situation with the DMV, if you're starting to get hearing notices and points warnings, habitual offender warnings, or an actual habitual offender certification letter, be careful how you deal with that. Call me as soon as you get it. Another technique or practice that's being done now is when a person is served with habitual offender paperwork, they do it at the DMV. So you get a letter, hey, come on up here. We want to serve you with habitual offender paperwork.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah, and they'll have a trooper up there to serve them. By law, it has to be done by a state trooper. And that you'll see them serving 12, 15 people at a time. And the people are given the option, do you want to have your hearing right now? You can get it all over with.
Hearing?
Yeah, and you go in after the service and you have the hearing done, and then you're a habitual offender, and it's really bad if you get caught.
Wait, they used to just send you like a letter.
Yeah. Well, you don't need to tell them about your experience. If you've gotten a letter like Courtney or like so many other people, give me a call. 603-893-0074. Thank you very much for listening today. And feel free to visit my websites, nhcrime.com or byebyedwi.com. Thanks again, everybody. Thanks, Courtney, for joining me.
Thank you.
And we'll be back to talk with you again next week.